Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us tonight to join the conversation is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is the website, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and listen to the live stream from that location. Or you can download the TuneIn app on any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. Download the TuneIn app, and in that search engine, type in Time for an Awakening. And there you'll see the icon where you can listen to the live stream on any of your devices, even into your car. It's Time for an Awakening with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. It's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. Just look in that Facebook search engine and type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, hit that like button for me. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. Also, Time for Awakening Media has been launched, with a lot more interesting things coming on the Time for Awakening media page. A lot of interesting content there, blogs, podcasts, and programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us, founder and president of the National African American Gun Association. Mr. Philip Smith will be with us in conversation this evening to discuss the organization that he founded and started, with his primary goals to expose, educate, and motivate African American men and women to go out and purchase firearms for self-defense. We'll get in conversation with Mr. Philip Smith, president of the National African American Gun Association, after we take a break for a brief word from our sponsors.
Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Hey. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we go to our special guests, just want to welcome into the program my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us on the line. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Brother Elliot?
How you feeling on this rainy night here in Philadelphia, Friday evening?
Oh, it's kind of died down a little bit, but the all day long, I was hoping before I got out, it would stop, and it gave me a chance to move around. The temperature isn't bad, so that makes it not really too bad, but it's definitely a lot of rain, a lot of ugly, dark clouds going on right now.
Yeah, it's a little raw for a May. It's a little raw for May, period. But
yeah, the sun seems. I mean, like, and the temperature too. You know, as far as the waves, all winter long, and you know, the seasons is just, you know, these here spans of 15 jumps up and down in degrees from morning to afternoon, or you know, it's just interesting.
You know, another thing that's interesting is our guest this evening. You know, we talked about this before in the program, and it comes up in conversations, especially in the times we're living in now, of constant police violence. Now with the presidency of Trump, you see a lot more of citizens attacking or white citizens attacking black folks, and now you see a reciprocation of some of the same things, a lot of violence going on. But I think one of the things that we're going to discuss with our guest tonight is the need for our people, almost since we've been on these shores, to learn how to protect ourselves and have the capabilities to protect ourselves. You know, for a number of years, our people couldn't own firearms. It was illegal. You would be jeopardizing your life in certain areas. It was legal for blacks to own firearms, and we'll talk about some of that with our guest this evening. But in present day, and since I guess maybe the turn of the 20th century, when World War One and other times when our people use firearms to defend themselves and defend communities, it's necessary now that we learn how to use firearms, learn how to use them safely. And our guest this evening is president of the National African American Gun Association. Mr. Philip Smith is with us on the line. Mr. Smith, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Oh, I'm glad to have you on with myself and my co-host, Brother Richard.
How you doing, Mr. Smith? Great.
Thank you.
You know, Mr. Smith, I ran across the organization because I've seen literature online in reference to it, and we talked earlier because I was under the impression that another person that I was familiar with was a part of the organization, and he wasn't. But I'm really excited to know about the organization. It's been in existence for a couple of years. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of the background of the organization and things of that nature, let's talk about yourself, Mr. Smith. You started this organization a couple of years ago. But tell me why you started this, and were you familiar with weapons before? Were you in the service? Talk a little bit about your brief history before you talk about why you started the organization.
Sure, sure. Well, first of all, again, thank you for having me. My background, I was born and raised in California, a little town called Vallejo, what we call the South Side of Vallejo. Small town, nothing too significant about it. In our home, I had two older sisters, two younger brothers, and my mother and father, you know, just being average hardworking black folks at that particular time, we didn't talk about guns one way or the other. It just wasn't really talked about. So coming up, my background did not have any connection to firearms in one way or the other. So it was just kind of left out there. But as of 2002, when I moved to Atlanta from California, I was dipped into the Southern culture. And as you know or don't know, the Southern culture is very, very connected to firearms. I mean, fathers pass down guns to their sons, grandfathers to their grandsons, mothers to daughters. During holidays, 4th of July, family picnics, you have competitive shooting, you go hunting. It's just ingrained in the Southern culture. And for lack of a better explanation, I guess I caught that bug and was really dipped into that process of learning about firearms in a very positive way. And that was the initial catalyst of me thinking about firearms, you know, in a very positive way. And just, quite honestly, just learning about firearms for the first time.
Tell me something, Mr. Smith. You said that firearms weren't really talked about in your home. Just a question. Were you raised in a kind of a church-going family?
No, it's your typical black family. My father was from Louisiana, New Orleans, and my mother was a country girl from Bakersfield, California. Mm-hmm. And, you know, father's mother was AME, and we went to church like everyone else, you know, on Sundays.
Okay.
But it was just your average black family at that particular time.
Okay. And you said that you were exposed to the Southern culture, which was steeped in guns. Where did you go?
Well, yeah, I had two coworkers at the time, and these two guys said, one, it was a Friday, I was getting off work, and they said, "Hey, Phil, what are you doing tomorrow?" And I just said, you know, quite casually, "Nothing." They said, "Why don't you come with us to the gun range?" And I was like, "I don't think so, you know." And they said, "No, why don't you just come, man?" And at that particular time, they just kept really just pushing me to go. And I said, "Okay, I'll go." So the next day, met them at the range and had a great time. I mean, I really had a very good time. Met some nice folks. Really got a chance to kind of, you know, I guess for lack of a better word, it was kind of machismo. It was kind of invigorating. It was just very, very a positive experience. But the one thing I did notice when I went out there was that it really wasn't anyone else that looked like me. In other words, there was no African-Americans out there. And when I looked around, I got, even though no one really said anything, and I was having a good time just learning how to shoot a gun for the first time, I got looks like, you know, "Why are you here?" And I've seen that look many, many times being a young black man. You walk into a store, a nicer store or something like that, and they get that look like, why are you here? And I kind of looked at them and say, you know, whatever. No words were crossed, but I definitely understood subtly what was being said. So I said to myself, if I can have a good time, I know my people can have a good time like this. So let me do some research, see if there's any other organizations out there, first and foremost, that are wanting to do it the way that I'm thinking about doing it. And when I did my research, I found out that no other organizations were out there that were speaking to the African-American community regarding firearms the way I wanted to present it. So that was the start of me thinking about the National African-American Gun Association, doing research about the black codes, doing research about the history of our firearms, and some of the people from Harriet Tubman to Dory Miller to the Tuskegee Airmen, and et cetera, regarding the history of firearms in our community. So I put together information, established a website, and on February 28th, in honor of Black History Month, I launched the website. And when I launched the website, I didn't think I was going to have very much activity. I thought maybe 200 or 300 people, you know, nationwide would maybe come and chat on the site, send me an email here and there, basically talk about the history of the of firearms regarding black folks, and that would be the extent of it. But within 4, 5, maybe 6 weeks, I had 300 people already. And at that particular time, that's when the light went on. I said, I must have hit a nerve that needs to be attended to within our community. And it has just literally exploded from that point where we are getting, at that particular time, we were getting 20 or 30 people a day joining. It went from just myself to the first year we had about 8,000 to now we have well over 18,000 folks. Last year, this time, we had 4 chapters. This year, as of today, we have 30 chapters. And I want to make sure that you guys note that the chapter is more relative to anything that we're doing, the chapter growth, because the chapter growth indicates at a very, very intimate level, the same conversation is taking place in different parts of the country with different black folks, but it's the same thing.
Okay.
We're all going through the same process. We're getting the same feeling politically, socially. The racial climate is very, very tense. So with that information and that synergy going on, we have really gotten to this point now where we're really starting to pick our stride. We have a long way to go, but we're definitely, I think we can do a lot of good things if we can't keep our head to the grindstone.
You know, the story that you told about your friend that took you to the range. Now, where were you at? What state were you at?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, it's kind of funny. I got a good buddy of mine up here in Philadelphia that's a gun enthusiast and been one for years. I think he got his whole den is full of different handguns, rifles. I mean, he has a lot of different things. So he talked me maybe last year into going to the range with him. I was never really a gun person. My dad taught me because he was from the South, and we would go down South occasionally to visit relatives. And my dad owned a shotgun and a handgun. And he used to teach me how to shoot it when I was a young kid, but I never really got, I never was really interested. So my buddy kept asking me to go, and I finally went with him about a year and a half ago. We went to the range. And when I went in, immediately, I relate to what you just said. I mean, it was full of Caucasians and I mean, like, what are you doing here? And the thing about it, when I looked out there at some of the targets and I seen different black faces, I think they had a picture of Rodney King, Al Sharpton, and they had all types of pictures of different black folks that they were shooting at. I mean, I didn't want to stay long. My buddy was he was really into it, but I just didn't. It kind of put a damper on it for me, and I wanted to go. But, I mean, I stayed through it, but I never went back. But, you know, yeah, I see a need clearly.
I think what you're saying is an experience that a lot of African-Americans go through. Mm-hmm. You want to do something, but culturally, you just don't feel comfortable because you know the subtleties of what's being said about you, even though it's not being said directly to you.
You know, but listen, I see a need for what you're talking about because if I could be in an environment where I have people that look like me and you feel more comfortable, you could kind of really get into it and understand the use of firearms, the skill in using them, and things of that nature. So hopefully maybe a chapter can be started up here. Brother Richard, you want to say something?
Yeah, you know, as y'all were expressing your experiences, because it's interesting with me, my experience with guns is growing up during that gang war era in Philadelphia. Though a lot of people talk about we come through, in my age, you come through a period where it was kind of like about switchblades and car aerials that and hand fighting. But we, you know, I can remember explicitly, you know, going to school and particularly in high school. And because I wasn't into a gang and because I wasn't into guns, the guys that I knew would use my locker as a place where they would, want to store the guns once they got in. So because we had what they called NTAs then. So if they got in school, concerned that they may get hurt. And I had people that I knew who were killed by guns. So when I went into service, you have to become proficient in shooting. And I had this resistance about even, handling a rifle, and at that point, was that the, I think it was the AK-47 or that we were using then. And they made it explicit. If you turned, you know, you could be shot because they didn't want nobody going off and shooting somebody off on a, shooting somebody on the line because they didn't know what they were doing. And I kind of almost was like one of those people because I kind of turned and the drill sergeant and everybody kind of like, you know, did the hollering to put me online, which made me come to the point as this whole thing of, you know, and this is during the Vietnam era. So later on, seeing the amount of gun violence in the community, what I seen was that, you know, these young guys didn't know how to shoot. And that's why a lot of the bullets that were catching children, seniors, was these guys who handled guns didn't know how to really shoot guns. So my thinking and perspective said that we need to be really trained early on because this being America being a gun culture, you know, and the urban area being able to have access to getting more and more access to guns, illegal guns. And we're in, you know, in the urban area, it's questionable compared to the South, Brother Smith, of how much people own guns legally versus illegally, you know. But that's my experience. So I kind of come to it from a point of, the, you know, very early on, we need to be trained. And I come from an area, as y'all both had enunciated, in South Philly, where it was a large Italian area, and them guys, they have a gun shooting place, you know, on a small street, and guns, bows and arrows. I mean, they're proficient. They are proficient. Where the people around me, they just had guns, and some would just be, you know, in the heat of the moment, they got their gun and then they were shooting. So that's my particular experience in relationship to the gun culture.
You know, looking at some of the things on the National African American Gun Association's website, it shows the need for our people to really, well, you know, the gun culture in some of these urban communities, the need to have conflict resolution, to understand that a gun is a powerful weapon. And once that bullet is discharged, it can't come back. You know, I think the whole dynamic of how they use guns, especially in the communities, is totally skewed. What Mr. Smith is talking about, and I know, that, you know, it's what you're talking about, Richard, is our people learning the proper use of weapons in relation to self-defense.
Yes.
And especially now with the environment that we're living in, It's almost not much different than Reconstruction period or the period before the Civil Rights era. You know, it seems like history keeps repeating itself for us here, but we really need to know how to use weapons safely. And the proper use of weapons, period, cleaning of them, how to handle them, things of that nature. Well, Mr. Smith, the organization, now you talked about it, well, I guess it's a little over 2 years old now, going on three.
Correct.
Talk about your membership, men to women, for example. Is it more women to join, more men, older, younger? Talk about your dynamic, or it kind of varies.
That's a really good topic that I'm very proud to talk about. We are not monolithic at all. We have literally every kind of African-American person you can think of. Black Republicans, Black Democrats, gay, straight, very rich, grumpy.
Okay.
You name it, we have it. We have plumbers, teachers. The thing that's really surprised me the most in this whole journey and since I've started is that consistently from day one, more African-American women are joining the organization as opposed to men. Right now, we are currently about 59-60% African-American women nationwide, and that's a consistent number that has been evident month to month, week to week, day to day. And I think that's happening for two particular reasons. One, in our community, let's just be very candid here, a lot of our women are single. And a lot of women that are single are typically gainfully employed, and they're looking for a replacement if they don't have a husband, that physicality. with a gun, just in case someone comes through that door in their apartment or home at 1 or 2 in the morning trying to rob them. So that is definitely something that is taking place. So you see a lot of black women who are single. Also, black women that have children are buying guns in record numbers to protect those kids, because they, again, are not attached to a man in terms of a relationship or a man in the home consistently, so they want to have a gun. So those two indicators or factors are really driving black women to join our organization, so much to the point where gun manufacturers have noticed and have really taken note that black women are a potential target market that you will start to see marketing specifically geared toward them if you haven't already, because it's a definite revenue stream that they can take advantage of. So that's one of the things I'm very, very proud about the organization. We do have white members as well. We have Asian, Latino, every walk of life we have in our organization. But make no mistake about it, we are unapologetically focused on African-American issues as it applies to firearms relating to our community, because we have never had a voice until now, in my estimation. Obviously, I'm very biased about our group, but we really try to talk about those issues that are important to us, such as black men open carry or conceal carry. Should you do that? Regardless if you have the legal right, is it wise to do that? Mm-hmm. Black women being shot, or black women shooting black men in incidents of domestic violence. We talk about all the issues that aren't necessarily talked about in the quote-unquote marketplace or in media based on some of the sensitivities that we're trying to dance around nowadays in terms of political correctness and all that good stuff. But we are definitely trying to be an organization that resonates in our community. We have meaning. We have value. If you have an issue, if someone is being shot or harassed by anyone, we definitely want to be an organization you can turn to for assistance, for help eventually. So that's some of the stuff we're working on, some of the stuff that's important to us as an organization and which makes us different from some of the other organizations that are out there right now.
Go ahead, Richard.
Smith, as you're saying about the percentage of black women, again, how does the demographics fall out, since you're this is a national association, in relationship to states? And you mentioned about, in Georgia, the tradition, particularly amongst whites. How does black participation, how does that geography work in relationship?
That's a great question. And I was looking at the analytics on that yesterday. We are heavily tilted toward the Southeast and Northeast, but let's be honest. The bulk of black folks, if you look at a national map, we're really in the Southeast, Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, that vein. That's where you really see a lot of our folks located at or concentrated. But we also have in the outer western areas, California, Washington. And for some reason, this is a side note, Washington State in the Northwest has consistently had some of the most highest member rates that we've had in terms of on a month-to-month signing up rate in terms of new members. For whatever reason, I don't know. I've never been able to figure that out, but Washington State definitely has a high percentage of members versus other states in the U.S. So most of our folks, as I was indicating, are on the Southeast, kind of that loop, that kind of an arc. But we definitely have members in every state right now. As I said before, 30 chapters and growing. We probably have 5 to 6 what we call interest groups. Those are chapters that are about to be launched of other groups of men and women that are strategically located in various parts of the country that are saying, hey, we want to start a chapter here. They're doing their due diligence because you have to qualify to start a chapter, certain things you have to do and certain things you have to have done before you can go ahead and start a chapter. So we're very poised to make a great, a great run in terms of growth. But I want to make sure the growth is very, very substantial. It's going to be value, not just a bunch of fluff, because there's no use having a large membership and no one's doing anything. And I think it would be horrible if we had a large organization that wasn't bringing some social value to our community, because I think that's important. And some of the things that we're working on for 2018, we're going to have a scholarship drive. We're going to help single-family homes that have a high school graduating senior, male or female, We're going to have two scholarships for both. That's coming from a single-family home, and the scholarship will be used for them going to college. The amount of the scholarship, I don't know. It depends on how much we get in terms of revenue, to be quite honest. But we're trying to have some value back to the community, as opposed to just saying, you know, we have a gun club. We go shoot every once or twice a month. We have a good time, but we're not doing anything. And personally, I think if you have a – if you're a black person and you own a gun, like it or not, you've made a political statement. And so with that statement, you need to do something that's going to have some positive karma, you know, within our own community. So that's just some of the stuff that we're doing, some of the stuff that we're looking at in terms of numbers and direction that the organization is trying to go right now.
Mr. Smith, the you talked about some of the things discussed in the group. Now, I understand that, you know, it's a lot of time spent showing people about the firearms, how to use them safely, firing them. Sure. But you talked about discussion. So it's a period of time, or you spent a period of time discussing social issues at the meetings?
We typically have our meetups divvied up in three ways. The first hour or 45 minutes, we talk about club business or national business, but we also have a theme of each particular meeting. One might be we're going to focus on stances, or we might have a focus on a particular way to hold your gun, watch your breathing, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have if we can, have a guest speaker come in and talk about a particular social issue or
okay.
a law that's been in place here in Georgia or wherever. But there's a consistent and concentrated effort to make sure that we can talk about those issues that's on our heart. Let's face it. Lots of times, being an African American in this country, you don't have a place where you can vent.
Okay.
And we see our organization is one of those places that an African American can come and talk about those issues relating to firearms and how it's impacting, you know, our communities. And I think that's important because you sit down, and when we had the Trayvon Martin issue incident, we had the recent incident of Alton Sterling, and et cetera, our other shootings like that, our folks were able to talk about it amongst each other. We talked about it in meetings. And I think that's very important because you need to have a place where people can go that you know, can talk about those things.
You know, the one thing that kind of strikes me when you said that it's whites have joined, Asians, and I guess a few others.
Yes.
The thing that's curious to me is you don't usually have other nationalities gravitating towards black folks unless they can make money or in business. Other
right.
nationalities come into black communities so they can profit. But mm-hmm. you really don't – it's really kind of strange when you have other nationalities gravitating towards a black organization that's really not in it to make money. Do they express to you why they have joined? I know you don't say, well, what are you doing here? But, I mean, do they express
right.
to you why? I mean – the NRA is out there. I mean, you have other organizations. Why did they choose the National African American Gun Association?
I think there's a small percentage, not a huge percentage. Obviously, I'm not a statistician, or I'm not going to try to act like I am, but there are some of those folks out there that have a sensitivity to our community.
Okay.
They're trying to do the right thing,
All
I
right.
think. And believe it or not, there's a lot of white males that are married to black women
okay.
That are joining our organization as a show of symbolism, I think, in some instances, but also
okay.
they truly believe that what we're doing is a good thing for our community, and they want to participate. They want to say, okay, you know what? We see what you guys are trying to do. I want to help out. How can I help out? And in fact, I've got an email a couple of weeks ago from a white gentleman who joined our organization in New Orleans, and he wants to lead the first white-led chapter. And he's married to a black woman. He has some beautiful black kids. He sent me pictures in the whole nine yards. And he was extremely excited about the possibility of starting a chapter under NAG. And as I indicated to him, I said, you know, I appreciate your enthusiasm. I love everything that you're doing. We definitely welcome you.
Curious, how many people does it take to start a chapter? I see that you have a vetting process on website where you can't have felonies, things of that nature on there, which is understandable.
Exactly.
But how many people does it take to start a chapter in particular areas?
typically, there's nothing hard, fast rule, but typically I would like to see at least three people.
In the
chapter, at least three. I mean, obviously, the more the better. Typically, most of our chapters are 20, 30, 40 people. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to say to some, you know, a group of men and women that are very enthusiastic about starting a chapter that you can't do that. But typically, I would like to see at least a minimum of three people.
And adding on to that, okay, and you have, say, starting with three people, is there other requirements, criteria, besides the personal, that is needed as a chapter, to be a chapter?
Yeah, and you bring up a great point. When I first started, I didn't really have a process. I just said, hey, you want to start a chapter? I have a conversation. I would vet the person personally, what's your background, what's your experience. You went in the military, you have some type of certification, you know, your special forces, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, start the chapter. But now what we're doing for all the chapters coming online, and you'll see this coming on our website, we have a much more streamlined and efficient vetting process where those people who's going to be leading the chapter will have to have a background check. And that's for safety reasons, because, you know, we don't want to have someone out there who's leading a chapter that might have some issues in terms of felonies, et cetera, that we don't know about. Or they're saying they don't have a felony, but we want to definitely want to prove that. So the process is getting modified as we speak, and hopefully within the next couple of weeks or month or so, we'll have that process officially noted and put on the website.
You know, just one more question before we kind of go into the history of guns and our people using guns in this country.
Sure.
You mentioned that a lot more women are joining than men. Just a funny question. Do a lot of the women grab the AR-15s or the big Dirty Harry, what's the 44 Magnums, or they get smaller
the
weapons?
357, yes. Yeah. Well, I can't have stats on it, but I think based on what I've seen locally and what I've heard nationally, a lot of women are buying just the pistols, but there are a few that are buying the ARs or the AK-47s or some of the long guns. But most are just buying, you know, a 9mm or a 45, mostly 9mm based on what I've seen.
So do you see them not only learning themselves, but bringing in young people to the range?
We are starting to see more and more young folks, and being that a mom and dad might bring their son and daughter with them now because they're starting to realize that, you know, if we have a gun in the home, my wife and I might be trained. But we have a 12 or a 13-year-old running around our house, so they need to get trained as well, because statistics are shown that when a young person, be it in their teens, is exposed to a gun the proper way in terms of how to handle the gun, how to shoot a gun, the dangers of a gun, the responsibilities, that greatly reduces the chances of anything happening in terms of accidental discharges, accidental shootings, accidental deaths. So you're starting to see more and more of the folks, you know, moms and dads, or just single parents, bringing their kids in with them to get exposed to the guns as well.
You know, on the website, you have a column that talks about the history of guns and our mm-hmm. folks' relationship with guns since we've been here on these shores. And sure. It was interesting that you kind of dealt with it from the 1700s, the 1800s, the 1900s. And you started with New Orleans, to be honest. And it's kind of funny that you were talking about New Orleans during that period, because myself and Brother Richard had a conversation about that period a couple of days ago. Okay. When we talked mm-hmm. about New Orleans and what was going on there. You mentioned in the passage that blacks wasn't allowed at a certain point to have guns, to ride on a horse with a gun. You could be shot on sight. But they started relaxing those laws because in New Orleans and Louisiana area, they used guns. They had to use guns for hunting and plus to deal with the Native Americans. So they allowed blacks to own firearms, and blacks started militias. But you mentioned, I think it was in 1803, when the United States, purchased that land from France. I think mm-hmm. it was from France, that they came in and disarmed black folks, and I think that led to a lot of those early riots, 1811 rebellion and things of that nature. Clear me up. Go through that little historical thing
sure,
that you did.
Sure, sure. Initially, just to kind of give everybody who's listening a backdrop, when African Americans came here to this country as slaves, as most of us know, we weren't even considered a person. And in that process of being characterized or put in that category, if we were to pick up a stick in some cases, just a stick or a knife, if a white person was walking down the street in the 1700s and saw you with a stick or knife, I'm not even talking a gun, because a gun, you'd be shot instantly. They had the authorization to kill you, and no legal consequences would happen to them. Now, I want everybody to kind of take a step back and just think about that. That could encompass a child playing, picking up a stick, making a little spear, and just playing around. And if a white person walked by and saw that child and thought they were a threat or were doing something that would be characterized as dangerous, they could kill that person or kill that child, that black child. So that is a position of total fear. You have no rights. You are literally the property of someone else. And that is the starting point where African Americans started in this country. So guns have been systematically pushed away from us from the very start. And only in cases where we are helping out the majority population, where we're allowed to use guns to fight against the Indians, as you indicated, to hunt. And we were very good hunters, by the way. In those instances only, where we were allowed to use firearms. So we've came from a place of total lack of rights in terms of firearms, where when everyone else came here, they had the right to bear arms. And the Second Amendment was, you know, in their pocket, where we didn't have that option. On the Black Coast, you go to the Jim Crow laws, where systematically, down to the history, community after community, they disarm black men first and foremost, black women, and literally put us in a position where we had, where we were victims, typically, where we had no chance of survival, and oftentimes were killed. How many times can you think about black men that were running for their lives that were lynched, who didn't have access to a gun? If they had a gun, they would have a fighting chance, but the people chasing them knew that they had nothing to protect themselves. So this history of being not able to legally purchase something that you can use to protect your family when everyone else can put us at a very, very bad disadvantage. And that, to me, is the social DNA we have to vet out of ourselves, because a lot of us nowadays still have that mindset that we don't need to have guns. Someone else is going to take care of us, et cetera, et cetera. That needs to go. But typically that was the history that we were looking at from the 1700s to 1800s that we needed to overcome. There were instances where there were some organizations that sprouted up. The biggest one that comes to mind, and most of you might have heard of it, is called the Deacons of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
They were based in Louisiana, and some gentlemen got together. They were all ex-war veterans, and they went out and they literally protected African Americans that were trying to vote and get their civil rights in the process in Louisiana. So they were probably the first, I think, the most organized group. And they were in various states. They didn't go very far, but they at least had an initial start within the Deep South of protecting and changing that mindset. The second group, and probably the most notable in contemporary times, is the Black Panther Party. They were the first organization in the modern era that utilized the gun specifically within their dogma to protect their community based on some of the things that were happening when they were interacting with the police in Oakland. We went a long way. We're now in the 20th century, where we have access to guns legally in most cases, but there's a new way of avoiding African American men specifically getting guns, and that's called felony. If you have a felony, you can't get a gun. And I can't – how many emails and phone calls I've gotten, well over 200, from black men that have really done good in the last 20 or 30 years, but something happened back in their teens or early 20s and it got a felony. They went out to, you know, went on in their life to buy a house, to get married, to have kids. They've got a good job. They're productive citizens in the country, but they still cannot go out and get a gun because they were selling drugs or marijuana back in, you know, 1960 or 1970. And to me, that's the thing we really need to hone in on, the legality of how African-American men specifically are being prevented, even today in 2017, to purchase guns. So we have a lot of work to do. Eventually, I would like to have the organization have a legal arm, very similar to maybe like NAACP, where we would really help those brothers that need to have those restored to them in terms of the Second Amendment. But that's going to take time. That's going to take money and revenue. And as I said before, we're just starting out, but we definitely have a plan in place in terms of the overall picture where we'd like to be as an organization, because I just don't want to sit back and have a whole bunch of chapters where we go shoot and that's the
and extent. That's
it. I see our organization doing much more than that in terms of having a valid presence in the community.
That's interesting that you raised that as a perspective. You know, Elliot, we usually hear about the effect of having a felony or being in prison as it relates to the 13th Amendment. But when you're talking about the Second Amendment, as far as also that you're not allowed to be able to, regardless of your, as you mentioned, Mr. Smith, regardless of the what you've shown in your life, not being able to purchase a gun, that does in a society that is a gun culture.
Exactly. Can I interject something real quick before I lose this thought? One of the things that a lot of folks, when I say this about black men and felons, because it's one of my pet peeves, because I really see the effects of this on a daily basis. As I said, I get at least 3 or 4 emails and calls every week from black men across the country. I want to distinguish this so everyone knows where I'm coming from. I see a definite difference between a violent felony and a nonviolent felony. If you were selling marijuana or you just got caught up, you need some money, you wrote some illegal checks, and you need to feed your family, I understand it. You got hit with a felony, okay. I believe that person should have the right to restore his Second Amendment rights. Now, I get it if someone has been murdering folks, violent, domestic violence with his wife or kids. That person, to me, does not need to have his Second Amendment rights restored. And that felony needs to stay there. But there's a lot of good black men, really good black men, that are out there in the United States today that have these felonies laying over their shoulders, and they can't do anything in terms of buying a gun. So they're literally helpless in some circumstances in these communities where a lot of violence goes on, let's be honest, and they can't protect their families because they did something 20, 30 years ago, and they have been outstanding citizens, not good citizens, outstanding citizens, going to church, raising kids, being a good husband, buying property. I mean, they just really right at that, you know, wrong that they did early on in their career. And let's face it, we all have done wrong things, so nobody's perfect. I just believe that those brothers need a second chance as it relates to their Second Amendment rights if they have not committed a violent felony. So I just want to try to make that distinction.
And that's critical because they, you know, again, it's a lot of that it's a lot of men who, as you characterize, did something in their youth, and it wasn't a violent act. And then we're learning in present about the young people who are being placed in jails that really have done no wrong. But because of the money being made out of the policing, they're caught up in the criminal justice system. And again, that perspective I've never heard on. So I think the association, the National African American Gun Association, at least having that understanding is an important policy and an important issue to put forth.
Exactly.
Mr. Smith, you in the environment we live in now, and it's been going on for decades, that you have Europeans in whether they're small towns and even major cities that have gun clubs and things of that nature where they're proficient in using weapons. In some communities, they have neighborhood town watches, but they use tax money to provide them with certain things, whether it's reflective jackets, walkie-talkies, where they're in touch mm-hmm. with the authorities. And if you come in a neighborhood and you're a strange face, and especially if you're black, you're walking like you maybe looking for an address or don't know where you're going, then you become a target, similar to Trayvon Martin, where these mm-hmm. men or these folks that, and a lot of them have permits to carry, can use these weapons with deadly force. Do you think it's time, and I kind of know the answer, but do you think it's time for our people to learn how to use guns proficiently, learn the proper use of weapons for self-defense, to learn how to protect our communities and in areas where we live at? Not saying that you want to start a violent confrontation, but learning how to sensibly protect our communities, similar to the way Europeans protect theirs.
Sure, sure. Let me say this, and I want to answer your question in two ways. In two ways. The first thing I want to say is that there are a lot of organizations out there that are non-black in the country right now that are so well prepared, so well organized, so well trained that it would scare you if you see some of the information that I've been able to be privy to.
Wow.
Based on what they are doing. And I mean to the point where there's an organization, I'm not going to mention the name, they have a warehouse, 50,000 square foot warehouse that is full of ammunition and guns. And now I ask myself to this, why would they have that? What are they anticipating? Now, are multiple organizations like this out there. This is happening to one of the larger ones. And they are literally prepared at a moment's notice in a very militaristic formation in response to protect themselves. So I want to say this to every African-American out there, and I'm not alarmist, but I'm a realist. Please learn how to shoot a firearm. Please learn how to take care of your community. Please learn how to be very, very familiar with the gun. And I'll say this. You should know your gun the way you know your spouse, that intimate. You should know how to break it down, how to put it together, know what caliber you like, know what caliber you don't like. You should know what type of guns are on the market. You should just not be a walking, talking expert, but you should definitely know the gun that's in your pocket or that you want to purchase or that you do have at home with your family. Because there is some realities going on right now that the African-American community needs to realize that if we don't wake up, we're going to wake up, unfortunately, in a position of total submission. And if we don't do something, it's going to be too late. So I'm not trying to, as I said before, be an alarmist, but there are some organizations out there that are very serious about their business of self-defense. I think we need to do the same thing for our community. So I guess for lack of a better word, not using an old basketball analogy, sometimes the best defense is a good offense.
And it's not as you were raising before about the history, because as you raise what was being done to Africans, in America, in order to prevent us from even dealing with having weaponry, and as you gave the characterization, or you and Ellie gave the characterization, even to a stick, these communities, white communities, have had the cultural enrichment that what they call militia, that they have an entitlement to be organized, to be able to stock that amount of armament and not have any negative projected by the law enforcement community or anything else as a means of defense. So I think that you're, as they say, spot on in relationship to not being an alarmist, but being that realist about the history of America, and particularly white America, and how they have done us. Elliot, as y'all were talking, I was thinking about the one of the guests that we had on with Wilmington, North Carolina, and the episode that happened there. Okay. None of the people had guns that had to be ran out of that town, so they couldn't protect themselves. So it does become important for us to be aware of just what we are living in. And I believe in the era of Trump just spoke to the NRA not too long ago,
mm-hmm.
being encouraging to them for his support. So it's not being alarmist at all. I think it's being informative of what we need to do and how we need to become organized and what tools we need to be able to at least be aware of and have functional use of.
You know,
yeah, and I,
oh, go ahead.
I definitely think you're right about that. I just want to get this thought off my mind. Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt there.
No, go ahead.
Our job at the National African-American Gun Association is very simplistic, but it's very hard. Our focus is to connect the 6 million African-American gun owners that we have today. As of right now, today, there are 6 million black folks in America that own guns. The problem and the issue is that they need to talk to one another. Mm. That's where we think our mission comes into play, by connecting those brothers and sisters together, by starting chapters, by having chat rooms, by having a Facebook presence. That's where I think we are really going to have our value in the long term, by organizing us so we can communicate. Modern technology has given us something very, very good called the Internet, and that can instantaneously, with a click of a button, you can reach 50, 60,000, a million people if done correctly. So that's the goal of our organization. We are definitely in that mindset to make sure that we can connect at a moment's notice to all of our members about updates, what to do, what not to do. Things are happening real time and out in society. So it's a work in progress, but hopefully we'll get there very, very soon.
You know, before we take a break, Richard, you kind of brought that back to my attention when we had Christopher Everett on, that had the documentary in Wilmington on Fire. And I asked him at the end of the conversation, in hindsight, looking at our ancestors and what happened in Wilmington, did we learn any lessons, or, you know, do you see any lessons being learned? And he mentioned himself, to kind of piggyback on what you said and what Mr. Smith said, that he said that our people should have been a little more prepared. When they were attacked by white citizens with weapons, our people were not prepared. So they are lessons to be learned, historical lessons that we need to take into account.
And we need to be prepared against anyone that comes into our community, regardless of, you know, their racial background.
Yes, I agree.
Whatever, it doesn't really matter. We need to be prepared, period. Every black man who's in a household should have his wife at least introduced to guns. His children should know how to handle a gun, because other communities of kids know how to shoot better than most adults. I can say that right now because I've seen it in action. So at a minimal rate, we need to upgrade our standards and what we require from our community as a whole. Doesn't mean you have to love your neighbor, but you need to go out with your neighbor and practice. Doesn't mean that you guys see eye to eye politically, socially. One might be a black Republican, one might be a black Democrat, but the thing you have in common is your skin color.
Okay.
That overrides everything.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can join the conversation too at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with the president and founder of the National African American Gun Association. Mr. Philip Smith is with us. And again, we're going to take a brief break. How's your time, Mr. Smith? You all right?
Hey, I can stay here all night. I'm fine.
we're going to take a brief break and continue the conversation. We'll be right back.
All right.
We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Mm-mm. Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com. Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right? Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy black365.com.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
We hereby present this charter, number one, the establishment. The Organization of Afro-American Unity shall include all people of African descent in the Western Hemisphere. In essence, what it is saying, instead of you and me running around here seeking allies in our struggle for freedom in the Irish neighborhood or the Jewish neighborhood or the Italian neighborhood, we need to seek some allies among people who look something like we do. And once we get their allies, it's time out for you and me to stop running away from the wolf right into the arms of the fox, looking for some kind of help. That's a drag. Number two, self-defense. Since self-preservation is the first law of nature, we assert the Afro-Americans' right to self-defense. The Constitution of the United States of America clearly affirms the right of every American citizen to bear arms. And as Americans, we will not give up a single right guaranteed under the Constitution. The history of unpunished violence against our people clearly indicates that we must be prepared to defend ourselves, or we will continue to be a defenseless people at the mercy of a ruthless and violent racist mob.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're joined in conversation this evening with the founder and president of the National African American Gun Association. Mr. Philip Smith is with us in conversation. And we got a couple callers on hold. I want to kind of get them involved in the conversation. But before we do that, Mr. Smith, you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
You know, you put a couple of quotes there on the website, and one quote I was totally unfamiliar with until I read what you put up there in words of Frederick Douglass in 1867. He said, "A man's rights rest in three boxes, the ballot box, the jury box, and the cartridge box." And the cartridge box. So Frederick Douglass, he wasn't messing around. And you
he was very serious.
You also mentioned in there about Ida B. Wells and others who advocated the use of firearms for our people at that time. You know, what was going on is almost similar to this climate. So our people were never really timid about the use of guns. But I think that the use of religion among some of our people, and I'm just being honest, has disarmed a lot of black folks to the point where they didn't want to have guns in their home, didn't want their family learning how to use guns. The salvation to the family was prayer, and God would take care of things. But in my estimation, the Almighty gives us a mind to use, and we're supposed to use that mind to benefit our families. So we can't always get on our knees. I think Frederick Douglass said in the narrative life of Frederick Douglass that he prayed for 20 years to be delivered off that plantation, and he said he didn't get an answer until he prayed with his feet. So until he did something on his own, then, and that's just my opinion. I might be wrong. I don't think so. But I think the use and the philosophy of certain religions have kind of muted our people to the point where we had an aversion to firearms. You can comment on that if you choose to, Mr. Smith, or you can leave it alone.
No, I do have a comment. Some of the most interesting and contentious and, I'm not going to say violent, discussions have been with folks of faith. And I want to make sure I note this before I make my comment. I'm a person of faith. I believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
I'm married to a woman whose father's a preacher. I've been around preachers in the black church my whole life. So I have the utmost respect, and I consider myself a Christian. But I'm a Christian that's not going to sit back and let my family get slaughtered while I have a Bible in my hand. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do something about it. And you do something about it by being preventive in your mindset and taking those steps to protect yourself and your family. There's a term that we use in the National African American Gun Association. It's called the following: agree to disagree, but not disconnect. And that means you can have someone who has a totally different perspective on firearms than you. But at the end of the day, you can yell and scream, but at the end of the day, when he or she has made their comments and you have made your comments, there's a mutual respect as black folks for each other. And that's something that we need to start doing. Some of the most difficult conversations I have had as the president and founder of NAG have been with the preachers within our own community. And quite frankly, a lot of them just say, "Hey, Phil, I respect everything that you've done. It's incredible that you've gotten this far. We see you doing a lot of things, but I totally disagree with you arming black folks." And I look at them with respect and not in a disrespectful way. I'll say to them, "We've tried it 300 years this way, and you see where it's gotten us. Let's try 300 years my way, and at the end of those 300 years, let's have a conversation and see where we're at." My guess would be that we're going to be in a much better position, because when you have the ability to protect yourself, your family, your community, those around you, and everyone else knows that, they're going to leave you alone for the most part. You don't want to wrestle with a lion. You don't want to wrestle with a sheep. And if you are viewed as a sheep, you're going to get treated as such. And I just want our community as a whole, and not in an aggressive, bully type of manner, but just very common, matter-of-fact, say, "Hey, I've got a gun. I'm a lawful caring citizen. I go to work. I take care of myself. I'm not a bully. But if you mess with me, I'm going to take steps to protect myself and my family." There's nothing wrong with that. That's not anti-Christian. That's using your God-given brain to protect yourself and those around you. So I don't have a problem with it. As I said before, some folks within our community don't see eye to eye, but that's okay. I think eventually they'll come around, because no organization, no community, no country, no group of people have ever existed long-term and not have the ability to protect yourself. And we need to start having that mindset of doing that. I always look at my Jewish brothers and sisters that have taken that mindset to the umpteenth degree, and I think that's a mindset we need to copy in full, and that if you tell one of those folks that you don't need firearms and everything's going to be fine, they will laugh you down the street, kick you down the street, in fact, and tell you that this discussion is over, because they know too well from the 1940s and the Civil War and the World War II and the Holocaust and those particular issues that they had to overcome, that they will never let themselves be in a position of not being able to protect their loved ones. And that's what we have to do unapologetically within our community. We have to take that mindset and internalize it, not only to ourselves, but our wives, but our kids and our kids' kids. So everyone knows that, you know what, we're going to go this month and we're all going to go out and shoot together so we can learn together. And that's a hard process, because you're changing your social DNA as a people into being proactive as opposed to being a sheep. And that's one of the goals of our organization. We want to change the social narrative and the mindset of our folks. It's okay to carry a gun. It's okay to go practice with your daughter at the gun range. It's okay to take your wife to the gun range. It's okay to get your license to carry. And if you're a woman and you put a gun in your purse and you're walking back late at night from work, that's your right to protect yourself. And don't feel bad about that. And that's a very tough process, but hopefully in the upcoming years we can change that mindset.
You know, you mentioned, Mr. Smith, about some of the ministers in your area, and you had heated discussions with them.
Yes.
It reminds me of the discussion I had with a potential guest, and he was in Atlanta. You might be familiar with the incident. I think it was about a year and a half ago, police went on a young man's job. He worked at an auto dealership. He was a mechanic. I think they went there to serve a traffic violation warrant, and he was working. They said that he tried to back the car over the police officer, and they shot him. They killed him at his place of work. It was outside of Atlanta. The president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and I forgot the pastor's name, he made a public statement saying that it's time that our people learn to protect themselves, because I think he knew the family or knew the young man that was on his job. I called him about being on the program, but the minute that he stated publicly that it's time for our people to learn how to protect themselves, he was censured and demoted from the post of being president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and I haven't heard from him. He was supposed to get back to me, because he said that he wanted to come on the program, but he couldn't do it at the time because they asked him not to speak. But he never got back to me or returned my calls. But that kind of harkens to what you were just talking about. You know, that spirit of being docile still remains in some of our spiritual leaders, if for lack of a better term. And it's something, a mindset that we need to break. Go ahead.
You're correct. You're absolutely correct. And I'll be honest with you, it can be very, very disheartening and frustrating in some cases when you're talking to a very intelligent black person and they seem to want to protect themselves. They seemingly, when they're looking right at you, looking right in your face, and I've had many conversations with very smart black people here in Atlanta, and I'm looking them in the face and saying, you know, you need to get a gun to protect your wife and kids. You need to get a gun to protect your kids. Why don't you do that? Well, Phil, you know, I just don't know. It just may not be something for us, you know. And they'll make every excuse under the sun instead of doing something until they get robbed, until they get raped or something very traumatic where they have to look at things from a different perspective. And God willing, it doesn't take that to make everyone start thinking. But a lot of our folks just do not see firearms as a potential solution for some of the ills that are out there. But, you know, as I said, we have a maturation process that's taking place in our community. It's quickly changing. Just to kind of give the folks out there some food for thought. In 2012, the Pew Research, which is a very recognized and respected research think tank, did a survey, and 22%, I believe, of African-American homes that were surveyed believed a gun was a value. The remaining percentage thought it was not. Fast forward 4 years, just 4 years later in 2016, they did that same survey, and now the percentage was 59%. So the dramatic pivot from 2012 to 2016 indicates that something is in the air where black folks are quickly changing their view on having a gun. And I think that's the best thing that can happen based on what they've seen in terms of terrorism, the social and political rhetoric that's been spewed for the last 18 months or so. So hopefully 4 years from now, we'll have another conversation where it's 65-70% of black folks are now saying guns are a good thing. But definitely something's in the air, and I think our organization that we have speaks to that reality, and that's why I'm here, because something has taken place in our community where we're starting to think differently, and I think that's a very healthy outlook.
You know, before I go to this call, let me tell you a funny story, Mr. Smith. We had Charles Cobb on the program, I guess it was about a year ago, when the book came out, when his book came out, This Nonviolent Stuff Will Get You Killed.
Exactly.
And he told us, to him it wasn't a funny story, but he told us a funny story of, he said that they had strategy meetings during the early 60s when they were having the sit-ins and things of that nature. And the meetings would go around to different homes. He said this particular time the meeting came around to Dr. King's home. And when they went in for the meeting, before the meeting got started, you know, guys just milling around talking. And one guy went to sit down in the chair, and another guy grabbed him and said, don't sit there. So he raised himself up, and there was two guns in the chair. He said, you almost said the guns. So he said that Bayard Rustin confronted Dr. King and said, what are you doing with guns in this house? You know, our movement is nonviolent. And he said, listen here, my house was bombed. He said, the movement is nonviolent, but I need weapons to protect myself. So he said that they had words, and they kind of agreed to disagree. But he said when the meetings went back, because they would go to around the different homes, when it made the complete circle to come back around to Dr. King's house, he said they didn't see the guns when they came in there. But he said he knew that Dr. King didn't get rid of the guns that he had. I just thought that was a funny story.
Right. That's pretty good.
Let's go to 215, area code. 215, what's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Brother Richard. How you doing, Mr. Smith?
I'm doing well. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty well, pretty well. You know, Mr. Smith, it was timely that Brother Elliot had played Malcolm as we went to the break a few minutes ago. He played Malcolm, and Malcolm was talking about, you know, our right as black people to protect ourselves and have self-defense. Because it made me think, you know, when you were saying, Mr. Smith, about how, you know, white people, how they teach their kids at a young age, because both of my parents from the South, my dad's from Virginia, my mom's from North Carolina, and the times I visited those places as a child and even as a teenager, you're absolutely right, Mr. Smith. I've seen white kids, you know, walk in there with their dads and stuff as young as 9, 8, 7, 8 years old, and these young white boys know how to shoot, too. They be packing, man, and they be walking. Maybe they be with their dad in the pickup truck with rifles, shotguns. They had like a little arsenal back there. I'd be like, damn, you know what I'm saying? So you're absolutely right. These white they definitely prepare their children on the use of firearms at a very young age. No question about that, you know. And oh, by the way, Brother Elliot, do Mr. Smith know the brother right here in Philadelphia? Who's part of the trying to, you know, get our people involved with responsible firearm safety and training? You know the brother Minaj. You know what I'm talking about, Elliot.
Yeah, Minaj. Yes, he's familiar with him.
Okay, yeah, because he's a nice brother. I talk to the brother all the time. And see, and the thing about me, Mr. Smith, I'm not necessarily a gun person. I don't particularly like guns from a personal standpoint. But just like you said, Mr. Smith, I'm a realist. You know, I know that in this climate that we live in to now and the way some of our communities are chaotic with some of our brothers that's so crazy as hell off those drugs and just that mentality that some of them have. And then we do the racist external forces, the white racist mindset, the George Zimmermans of the world, and all this kind of stuff. So I know we have a right to protect ourselves. So while I may not be a gun person, I have no problem, Mr. Smith, with black people learning how to shoot guns, learning how to use a firearm in a responsible way. Because like Malcolm says, it's inhumane to ask any human being not to be able to want to protect themselves. So I have no problem with black people, especially some of our sisters, learning how to use a gun in a responsible way, our children use in a responsible way how to use a gun, because we have a right at the end of the day to protect ourselves. So I have no problem with that. You know, it would be foolish of us not to, because anytime you see a brother like Dr. King, who was a staunch Christian man, but he was no fool, he said, I might be out in the movement, like you say, you know, being nonviolent, but when my house got firebombed, I'm realizing that's me and my family's life on the line. So Dr. King was willing to do whatever measures it took to protect themselves, you know, so I got no problem with that. You know, and Mr. Smith, by Brother Elliot and Brother Richard having you on tonight, it's so timely, because I was watching Tavis Smiley the other night, and the topic, he had the sister on from the Black Panthers. I can't think of the sister's name. Her name escapes me right now. But she was one of the strong sisters that helped organize back then during the height of the Black Panthers back then. And the topic of firearms came up, and Tavis was saying about how, you know, it's been a push over the years with you know, responsible gun control. So Tavis said that, well, you know, a lot of these members of the NRA and some of these white Republicans, when they start saying black people in droves start getting firearms, and not, you know, getting firearms for the sake of just getting for criminal acts, but just to be able to protect themselves, he said, believe me, you'll see more white folks in the Congress and the Senate definitely be pushing for so-called gun control, because they'll see that fear. They see all these black men and women around the country getting guns, and like you just said a few minutes ago, Mr. Smith, the economy is changing. Like you say, more and more black people are changing their views about having firearms now, which, like you say, is a good thing. You know, no doubt about it.
I want to coattail on something you just mentioned.
Sure.
And I want everybody to kind of internalize this, if you can. We are not second-class citizens. We are not a discounted citizen. We have the full right to protect ourselves in a legal fashion. And I'm not talking about going around being aggressive and trying to start something. I'm just talking about having a gun is your Second Amendment right. And don't let anyone take that from you. You have the right to protect yourself and your family and your loved ones.
Yes.
That is the law.
Yeah, I agree. No doubt. And see, like I said, Mr. Doc, I come from families that have guns. Like I said, my father, rest his soul, he was an avid hunter, and my father, he knew guns. He grew up in Virginia. From the time he was a young child, he was out there hunting with my grandfather, you know, hunting and stuff, and fishing, outdoorsmen and stuff like that. My dad had rifles, shotguns, pistols. He knew how to break a gun down. Matter of fact, at the time when my father died in 1975, Mr. Smith, he was in the process of making it. He was making a gun. He actually did it from scratch. He got a wooden, wood, and he cut it, shaped it up like a rifle is, and he was putting it together. He never got a chance to finish it because he got sick and passed, but he was in the process of making a gun from scratch. You know, that's how much he knew guns and stuff. You know,
that's incredible.
You know, and my uncles and stuff on my mom's side, same way. North Carolina, they're a bunch of hunters. They got guns, they got shotguns, rifles. My uncles and stuff up here in the Philly area, and the ones that's still living in North Carolina now, my cousins, uncles, all of them, they got guns down there. And these people, they know how to shoot well. They go out to the range on a regular basis. They know how to shoot, and they will have no problem if it comes down to them protecting their families from external forces, the white bigot hate mobs, or people that look like them that want to do them harm. They had no problem defending themselves. Believe me, you don't want to come mess with them, because they be well armed and they well prepared. Make no mistake about it. You know what I mean? They scared me when I be down here sometimes. I be down there visiting them, Mr. Smith and Elliot and Brother Rich, and I saw them guns. I say, damn, boy, I said, why don't we get y'all upset with me down here? You know, all these guns around me. But, hey, but the bottom line is that they will protect themselves if they have to, you know. But you're right, though, about I'm not, Mr. Smith. We live in a climate now where we see clearly, like you said, and these people got these warehouses, like you said, with all this full of ammo, full of firearms or whatever. Like you said, who are they getting this stuff from? I mean, one don't have to be a rocket scientist to know what time, especially in this era of Donald Trump, or even before him, when you see the climate, the mentality, the code words that these people use, you know darn well they ain't getting them guns just to be shooting each other and shooting animals. Who they got these guns for? The old saying goes, it's open season on black people, like Brother Minister Rodney Muhammad of the Nation of Islam said a few years ago. The season never closed on black people. You know, I mean, the season always been open. So we got to be able to, you know, be prepared to protect ourselves and be able to respond in kind, God forbid, if it ever come down to something like that. Because and my last point, Brother Elder, and I thank you for your time, is like Brother X always said about extermination. I think, Mr. Smith, you kind of alluded to that a little bit. These people will have no problem if we don't be in a position to protect ourselves. Like you said, we put ourselves at the mercy of being on submission, which goes to what the Brother X from Chicago always say, you definitely be a people that's ready for extermination. Because like you said, if you can't protect yourself, you will be exterminated. And that's what, like you said, Jewish people have said. They say they always use the term never again, never again. And we have to be the same way, never again, never again. So that's my say-so, that's my, you know, my commentary for tonight. And I thank you, Brother Elliott, for your time. And Mr. Smith, you keep doing what you're doing and keep going around the country educating our people to let them know as a United States citizen, they have a right to bear arms and stuff to protect themselves and their families. I have no problem with it. Like I said, no, I'm not a gun person per se, but I have no problem with black people want to bear and protect themselves. That's our God-given right. That's our constitutional right.
Thank you for your call,
Thank you, brother.
You're welcome.
Ellie, before you go to the next call, can I ask a
certainly?
Because I was wondering as we were talking, and you may have already touched on it. Most of the members that are joining now in the National Association, of African American Gun Association, do they come for the recreation aspect of? I know when you started, you were saying you went to a club and it was basically a kind of recreation. Do they come for recreation, or is it for that sense of having self-defense?
It's funny because, you know, we're not monolithic as a community, and it just varies, but there are three main themes that I see. One is the threat of being robbed. I got robbed, Phil, or several of the women that have talked to me in privately say, Phil, I got raped. I'm not going to let it happen again. A lot of brothers came to me and said, hey, someone broke into my house, beat me up, stole my money. It's not going to happen again. So that's the your normal, if you can call that the normal threat of being robbed and broken into is there. Two, aside from crime, is the threat of terrorism. Terrorism, as we see it on TV overseas and now starting to creep in the U.S., is really on the psyche of a lot of our folks, because, you know, black folks are American citizens, too. We're scared. You know, we're scared for our babies. I'm scared for my babies. I don't want them to take a bus and get the bus blown up. So we see that, and it bothers a lot of us. So a lot of us are saying, you know, I need to get a gun just in case something happens, or a San Bernardino or a Charleston happened where somebody walks in and starts shooting. I want to have something on me. But without question, just me being very candid, the most dominant theme that I've seen as of late is this: the social realities of what we're facing right now, the political rhetoric of the last 18 months where, and I don't get into parties because I have black Democrats and black Republicans, Libertarians, Tea Party members that are members of NAG. But I will say this, and I want to be clear, that fringe groups, without mentioning names, that we saw 4 or 5 years ago in the shadows, deep in the shadows, that we never, ever, ever thought would be in the forefront of society, are now not only telling you who they are, but they tell you their address, their phone number, their email. It's, for lack of a better word, it's cool to be a racist right now. It's in fashion. It's a trend. You want to have your Facebook hits go up, say something politically incorrect. It's this very, very insensitive conversation going on right now regarding black people and minorities as a whole. So it's something that I've seen in terms of making our membership grow dramatically. Hopefully down the line, my wish is that when people join in the future, they'll be able to say, you know, Phil, I just want to grab a gun and be able to protect myself, and just I want to go hunt, I want to shoot competitively with skeet. But right now the climate is such where we're getting different reasons that are making our folks apprehensive to make them join our organization.
Let's go to 602. 602 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. This is Brother Marcus from Memphis.
How are you, sir?
I'm all right. And good evening to your guest, Brother, good brother. You know, it's well, the brother say, you know, about the preacher, you know, down south here, they say the preacher, they have one hand got the gun and one got the Bible. And they'll say, Jesus, 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 Jesus. And if Jesus don't work, boom, that's it, you know. So I agree with you. And, you know, some of these preachers who are saying that they are not violent. Look, even God himself was violent. Because what God did, when he went to war against Satan, they went to war. You know, they fought, and God threw him out of heaven. Ain't that what the Bible says? So they are contradicting the Holy Book because God is a God of war. God ain't no punk. He ain't gonna roll over. He fought, you see? And even Jesus, there is a verse in the Bible that said Jesus was going somewhere and he asked Peter, he said, Peter, how much swords we got? So if Jesus was on earth today, he would ask Peter, how much Uzi we got? Or how much Mach 10, you know? But look, it's a poem. This poem, it's by Mr. Garvey. It said, the Negro slept 1,000 years while white men moved along, and so he sheds his bitter tears as white men sang their song. Another day has just begun for white and black alike. The white man greets it with his gun. Will Negroes ever strike? And that was written in the 20s. So this brother is right on time. You know, we got to defend ourselves. You know, and one more thing. And this is in reference to that the Ferguson riots that happened, that brother they killed. Now, three other activists have mysteriously died. My brother, I was reading an article today, my brother Edward Crawford, he was one of them that threw the tear gas canister back. He mysteriously died the other night, got shot in the head. DeAndre Joshua and Darrell Seals, other two, they got shot in the head and their cars got burnt. So the war is still on, see? So the brother is right on time. I appreciate it, brother. And you, brother, you take care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call.
All right.
If I may,
go ahead.
Another question I have for you, Brother Smith. Sure. You know, I'm wondering how do you see we should, and it's something that you kind of related to in relationship to the different groups that are out there and the response, how free they feel, because I remember a FBI report that came out a few years ago as far as how maybe. What's that? White nationalist individuals are joining law enforcement agencies. So I'm wondering, how do you see it we should have, from your vantage point, the discussion about black people and guns? And I noticed you said y'all had discussion about black men dealing with open carry. How should we deal? How do you think we should handle the discussion about black people and guns and the law enforcement? Since it is that historical tension of that we have as far as black men and women having guns, but particularly black men. But now we're seeing these incidents, whether they're related or unrelated, from law enforcement pulling the trigger on men who don't have guns. As we become more gun responsible, how do you see we should handle that discussion?
I'm going to say this, and when we, as a people, look at the law enforcement, we have to start thinking strategically. I'm tired of protests. I'm tired of, and I'm the most Afrocentric person that you'll probably ever meet. I don't talk about it. I am about it. I let my actions speak louder than the words. I just really believe that what we need to do, and I think Martin Luther King laid the blueprint right there in front of us with the Montgomery boycott. Each and every time there is an incident regarding the police, and I want to say this about the police, 99% of the police are okay. They have to do it. They got a hard job. I got quite a few law enforcement officers that have joined our organization. We've had some tough conversations, as I mentioned before, but most of them are good gals and good guys. They try to do a good job, but they are a significant amount, or there's a prevalent percentage that's out there that is doing great harm for the law enforcement brand. I don't know if it's 1%. I don't know if it's 2%. But that 1 or 2% that's out there is over-incarcerating our folks. They're killing our folks. They're beating our folks. They're raping our women. They're doing a lot of things that are really not, you know, good. We need to root those people out. And we need to root them out fast. And law enforcement is going to have to take that step internally and point those folks out and get rid of them. And I know we're talking about the blue line and all this other stuff that's, you know, the secrets within the law enforcement, but something has to happen internally with them. What I think what we should do as a people, as I said before, I'm tired of the protests, the black power signs. I believe in economic pressure on a community. The next time a black person is shot and it is deemed after the research is done and the findings come out that this particular person was shot illegally by whomever, we need to stop going to the bank. We need to stop going to the grocery store in this particular community. We need to stop going to the barbershop. We need to stop going to any and everything connected to that community. So there is economic pressure put on that community where the business class will run to the mayor, run to the police chief and say, look, I'm losing money. And America is based on money. Make no mistake about it. If you want to affect change, affect the pocketbook of those in power. And business class folks have influence. They have the phone numbers of the police chief. They have the phone numbers of the mayor. And they'll get on there and say, look, we want this guy arrested now. Otherwise, I'm going to go out of business. This posturing and begging for a media photo shoot and all this other stuff doesn't do any good. But economic pressure on a community when something has happened has been proven to work. As I said before, Martin Luther King put the blueprint out there for us to see years later down the road when blacks were not allowed to sit in the front of the bus after years and years of getting mistreated, spit on, cursed at. They said, okay, you know what? We're not going to ride your bus. And quickly, the owner of the bus line went to the police, went to the mayor, and said, we got to change this. Otherwise, I'm going to go out of business. And they broke the law. They broke the Montgomery bus line to relenting and now letting black folks ride anywhere they want. And that's what we need to do the next time there is any type of shooting or incident in which social injustice has been inflicted on our people. As I said before, we have to start thinking strategically, not emotionally, strategically. We have to align ourselves with folks within our community. We may not even get along with each other. We may not even like each other, but we have to start working together. So that's my comment on that.
It's very much appreciated. If I can, I noticed in on your website you had put that there was a black gun manufacturer, and we had had discussion before, and we were saying we didn't believe that there was any black people that manufacture guns. So is that, to your knowledge, is that the only company black company that manufacture guns?
Civilian Force Arms, CFA, is one of the companies that is producing firearms from scratch. In other words, they are licensed by the federal FFL, Federal Firearm License, licensee, the ATF, to make a gun, produce the gun, sell the gun. They have all the licenses to legally do that. They do it at a high level. They produce quality guns. I think there is a couple of other organizations out there, but I have not been able to validate that. But there's some folks out there that are African American that are producing guns that are selling them. So it is a fact.
Where are they located at, Mr. Smith?
I think they're outside of Chicago. I know they're in Illinois. Where they're at exactly, but I don't know. But they are outside of Chicago.
Say that name again.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Say that name again, please.
CFA Civilian Force Arms. Let me verify that with my notes here. They are led by a gentleman who's a Purple Heart awardee. He is awarded a Purple Heart, really articulate, very smart, and he's producing firearms that are sold nationally. Really sharp brother. Very, 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 you know, definitely somebody that you want to talk to.
Okay. And when you mentioned about the number of African-American gun owners, and you mentioned about the, you know, the whole thing of the economic incentive to stop some of the murderous killings by law enforcement by economic boycott, you kind of reemphasize, here is how we can create, because gun selling in America is a big business. You know, assist in by purchasing from a gun manufacturer, African-American gun manufacturer. And that's why I thought it was important to, you know, for you to share that with us.
Yeah, they're called Civilian Force Arms. They're based in Yorkville, Illinois. The owner is a guy by the name of Jonas Hogas. I think it would do everyone a benefit to take a look at them. They're called Civilian Force Arms, CFA, and they are a African-American-owned company, and they're doing big things. So that's somebody that we should also try to support them in their efforts in terms of what they're trying to do and the product that they're making. Because what I understand, the product is very, very good. It's a high level. Okay. They make AR-15, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. All right. Hey, Mr. Smith, your membership, national, international, tell us the dynamic.
We're a national organization. We have members in every state. We have chapters, 30 chapters as of right now. As I said before, last year we have 40. Now we have 30. We're probably on tap to have another 8 or 9 over the next 3 or 4 months.
Wow.
But we're slowly trying to roll that out. And the chapters, to me, is the thing that really makes me feel positive and gives me good feelings, because that lets me know, as I said before, the conversations that you and I and all of us are having right now online and together are happening at dinner tables across the country with other black folks who feel the same way that we do, that they're saying, you know, we need to go ahead and get some guns, we need to start a chapter, we need to start getting organized, et cetera, et cetera. So that means at a grassroots level, to put it in political terms, there's a swelling of interest. It's starting to build momentum. And once you get that type of momentum, it becomes more than just the National African American Gun Association issues. It becomes a movement that affects us socially on much bigger terms. So that's very, very good. We also have, aside from our national growth of 18,000 members, 60% African American women, as I mentioned before, we have a following on the western part of Africa, of Ghana, Nigeria. We have a lot of brothers over there that have joined the organization that follow us on Facebook. So, and Jamaica as well, the islands, the Caribbean, we have a lot of brothers and sisters that follow us. So we definitely have a slight international flair, not, I'd say about maybe 1 or 2%, but the majority obviously are here in America.
Okay. Let's go to 646. 646 area code.
Yeah, what's going on, Brother Elliot, to your guests and the Richie? Listen, I want to take my hat off to you, brother, and I want to thank you for speaking the message that you're speaking. Because you got a lot of black people out there who are some real blatant fools when it comes down to firearms in regards to ownership, because that pork chop chicken eating preacher told them that they need to leave it in the hand of white Jesus and they don't need their guns. And they want them to bring him to the church to turn him in for a voucher of $100 or something like that. No, brother, no whatsoever. We need to be having more and more guns than anybody else, because when this cracker get ready to do his thing, they are well-armed. And when I say well-armed, they are well-armed. They're not playing no game. And we are, as a people, are not really in any position to defend ourselves against the onslaught that they will really put on us. You know what I mean? And we're not only talking about white folks. We need to look at this Babalooey also. You know what I mean? Because they're well armed and they're no friend of ours. So, I mean, I think we're going to have to start realizing very clearly that we are in some serious threats as a people in regards to our safety in this country. And we have to look at it truly, because at some point in time, it's going to be a confrontation in regards to arms in this country, because the resources are dwindling. It may not happen 5 years from now. It may not happen 10 years from now. But I guarantee you, within the next 20 years, it's going to happen. So you got enough time to really organize our people so that we can have whatever we need to be able to survive. Because I'm not letting nobody come up in mind and decide that they go just do their thing and it's going to be all right. And I'm just going to get on my knees and pray to the sky doctor, the sky daddy, rather, to save me. It never happened, baby.
Jay, I want to thank you for your call. Any comments?
Elliot, it's not funny, man. It's real talk, because I'm telling you, anytime you have a pork articulating preacher get up in the middle of a service and tell you that the sky daddy gonna save you and to bring your guns in and get you $100, $200 or get you a gift certificate so you can buy your baby some toys or something like that, something fundamentally wrong with that, knowing the history of this cracker. You know what I mean? The greatest organizations I believe that we ever had were the Demon Deacons of Defense. And we need to get them back, because something is fundamentally wrong with us, Brother Elliot. I'm sorry to say it.
Well,
it
is kind of ironic that they always have these turning your gun things in urban areas and black communities. And
you ever heard of them have one for white folks?
To be honest, no.
So what is that telling me?
No, I agree with what you're saying.
If you think about it, you know, we laugh or whatever, we chuckle about it. But, you know, that's really telling you that we want to be in a position to slaughter you without you having no form of resistance to protect yourself against that slaughter, and that we're going to give you the mystery sky daddy as the auspice of just doing it, of just saying that we should, because he going to protect you. Just get on your knees and pray, and he going to protect you. And if you ain't a damn fool to believe that, then, you know, something wrong with you. But, you know, carry on, and I'll speak to you on Sunday. Okay.
You have a good evening, Jay. Mr. Smith, we're coming up on the end of the program, but we still got a little bit of time. Talk about
I wanted to mention, if I could.
Go ahead.
I'd be really missing the point. We have an excellent Facebook and Twitter and Instagram presence on the Internet. Say that again?
No, I wanted you to talk about that anyway before you did. But go ahead. Because I want you to say it again before
Facebook,
you leave.
We have a strong presence led by a gentleman by the name of Doug Jefferson. Does an outstanding job for us. He handles national exposure for the organization. And I encourage everyone to go to our Facebook location, look at the conversations that are taking place, look at the information that's there, get involved, spread the word. This is serious. It's a serious business, but it can be fun at the same breath. If done correctly. But definitely go to our internet and social media presence and see what's available and follow what we're saying and what we're doing, because that's how the information gets out, because we're teaching each other. Something I may not know, you might know, you can help us out, because we don't know everything that's out there. We're learning just like everyone else out there in the marketplace. We've only been in existence for 2 years. We're doing great. Absolutely. We're doing very, very good. We're exceeding expectations every year and every day. But there's still a lot to learn, and some of the folks that are listening might know some things that we need to know. So please get on Facebook and reach out and let us know if there's information points of conversation and interest that we should take note of.
And also, you have a newsletter. I'll be in touch with you because if you send me copies of it, or if I, well, I'll join the organization and I just received the copies. I can post that or repost it on our website to become like a partner to the organization.
That'll be great. I did have a story I wanted to tell everybody quickly. This is a what I call a success story, and I was just very, very brief. This is regarding a preacher here in Atlanta, very well known. It's been on TV. Everyone, if I mention his name, everyone would know him. And he made a call to me. Well, I made a call to him initially about a year ago. And at that particular time, we were just getting started. And I asked him, do you guys allow guns? He goes, absolutely not. He kind of hit me over the head, made me feel foolish. Make a long story short, we had a couple of emails back and forth over the last year. But the last email I got, he said, Phil, we are going to allow our security force to carry guns now based on what's going on, and I'm going to start carrying. I'm not going to tell my membership, but I am going to carry a gun. So I consider him a convert and a success story, and hopefully as we grow stronger and more information is out there to our religious folks, that they'll take that mindset too, because there's nothing wrong with having a gun and praising God. It's just a matter of how you conduct yourself and what you're praying for and what you're praying about.
Well, I guess it's a process, Mr. Smith, because, for him to say, I'm going to carry, but I'm not going to let the membership know, that's doing a disservice. If he's reached a point where he's changed his mindset in reference to protecting himself, then he should let the people know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean, that's just my comment. Yeah.
Yeah.
The stand your ground laws, because Richard asked a question earlier about, open carry and the wisdom of our people in certain areas to open carry, similar to other ethnic groups, particularly Caucasians. The stand your ground laws, because we've seen incidents happen around that, whether it's Trayvon Martin, whether it's the other young man that was in Florida that pulled up to the gas station and playing his music loud. And the guy felt threatened. Incident in Detroit where the girl had a car accident and was bleeding. She appeared at a person's house late, and he said he felt threatened and shot, I think a shotgun blast through the door. It seems like now that when Europeans feel threatened, they use the stand your ground law, or have been using it, and a lot of states have adopted similar laws of stand your ground. How does the membership react to this? Now, question before you answer it: is there a legal arm to the National African American Gun Association, where if someone gets in trouble in reference to obeying the law, where they can get legal help, or is that in the making, or what?
Officially, as of today, we do not have a legal arm, but we are slowly going in that direction. Just to kind of give you guys a news break, recently we have the former federal prosecutor of the state of Georgia join our organization, and she has been fabulous. I'm not going to mention her name because she'll hit me over the head, but she has been great in giving us insight into some of the legal issues that we need to review, think about strategically, as well as acting upon. So there is that's been going on. Now, hopefully within, let's say, a year from now, you and I can have a secondary conversation where I can say, we're fully up and running, and we do have a legal arm. But to do that, to get that kind of bandwidth, it takes revenue.
Yes.
And I can dream about a lot of stuff. You and I can have great conversations. But unless folks understand that we had to get memberships and that money needs to be directed toward, growing the infrastructure, we won't be able to do anything. But hopefully that'll happen soon. We're starting to go in that direction, and we'll be able to see, the next 6 or 7 months what happens. But I would love to have a legal arm. I think it should be a requirement for our organization, because I just don't want to be, as I said earlier, to be an organization full of chapters that we go happily once a month or twice a month to go shoot, and we can't do anything to help those black families that go through issues. We can't help those brothers that cannot get their Second Amendment rights reinstated because of past felonies. So I think we owe our community that much to have those two facets up and running.
And the first question about the stand your ground, what is the conversation among a lot of the members in reference to a lot of those laws and how do they feel, dealing with that? Because, for example, you got a lot of states, and it came to light to a lot of people when you had these presidential races, that a lot of Europeans were going to these rallies with guns where everybody saw them. Some people were shocked, saying that, how can you do this? And come to find out some of the states had, as long as it's holstered, as long as it's visible, it's all right to carry. But I didn't see in a lot of those states blacks doing that. And I'm quite sure it's a lot of blacks, doing it in open carry states. But what's the dynamic? What's going on in reference to this? And is Georgia an open carry state?
It is an open carry state if you have your license to carry.
Okay.
You're allowed to, you can purchase a gun legally and not have a carry license and carry it in your car or have it in your house. But to carry it openly, you need your license. Your concealed carry or your carry license that's issued by the state. Now, I want to say this regarding the conversation or conversations on open stand your ground. On paper, stand your ground to me is something that's good. But in reality, the way it's enforced, how it's really affecting our community is very, very tough. Now, I'm not going to speak for every member of our organization, and that's well over 18,000, but it's a tough conversation. We have some members that are very conservative in nature, that love their community, that think stand your ground is a great thing, and we should try to get more of it across the country. And you have a lot of folks that fall into my camp that see stand your ground as a veil to execute some of our folks. Mm-hmm. So it's a tough, sensitive conversation that varies from member to member, but a lot of our members have been upset about how the law is applied when it comes to us. There seems to be a different perspective when stand your ground is involving an African-American. Either we're shooting someone or being shot, there's a different perspective. We shoot someone, we're wrong, and that we overreacted. They weren't really trying to kill us or threaten our lives. And if we are getting shot, even though we're walking with Skittles and bothering no one, that shot was justified. So it just seems to be a wrong application of the law. And me personally, I've got a son who's 24, he's 6'2", big kid, wears a hoodie, probably the nerdiest kid you ever want to see, but he has the appearance of like a lot of young black men in this country. So I worry about that. And I think like a lot of black parents out there, you worry about how your kids are viewed and how they're dealt with by the police and, the larger society. But the stand your ground is something that's a hot button. And probably will be for years to come.
Okay. Well, I'm quite sure that your son is capable of standing his ground if confronted late at night or somebody tries to come in his house or apartment. Before we go this evening, Mr. Smith, give out any information you want to tell our listening audience. And in fact, you didn't get to mention some particulars about how much a membership is yearly. Sure.
If I can mention that very quickly.
Go ahead.
And this is to the everyone listening and either on the internet or just watching the show. It's very, very cheap. It's $24 to join. The money goes strictly to the organization. Our website is
wait. That's $24 a year, a month, or what?
That is an annual, once-a-year fee. We have, for $24, we have a single membership.
Oh, wow.
For $30 for a couple, for the year, it's $30, one payment. For a family of five, it's $40. So if you have a family of five, you can have your whole family join for $40 and have your membership active for the whole year with NAG. That means you get your membership cards, which we're going to be issuing this month for the first time. You'll get a monthly newsletter and corporate discounts from gun companies as they become available. So $40, it's a pretty good return of what you can possibly get, you know, coming from the organization. So I encourage everyone out there that's listening to go to our website, look it over, read, get as much information as you can. If you have any questions, go to our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram presence. Ask Doug Jefferson, who's running that, any questions you might have. He's a very, very talented young man who we've been very blessed to manage the social media aspect of the organization.
Yeah, I spoke with him earlier today. He's pretty sharp, brother. He gave me a call early.
Very young, and definitely somebody that is going to be a force to reckon with pretty soon himself.
You know what? And I'll probably get this information from you off the air, because you mentioned that you have chapters members in every state, but you don't have chapters. Yeah. Where are the states you have chapters in? Is anyone close to Pennsylvania here where me and Richard are at?
Yeah, we have a chapter in Philadelphia that's just started. They're trying to get their traction.
Oh, you do?
I'll definitely send that information. If you go on the website, you just click on to the right, you click on chapters, and it'll let you see the listing of what chapters are active right now. But right now we have 30.
Oh, okay. And there's one here locally?
Yes, there is.
Oh, great. Okay. All right. Richard, any last things before we...
Other than thank you, Brother Smith, for recognizing a need and being able to fulfill it. And I think, you know, with what you've said and what we're seeing in this national African-American Gun Association is definitely another organizing tool that is definitely needed within our community, amongst our people, and in this time. So you'll give me, maybe I'll grow up and become a member to the chapter that's formulating in Philadelphia and do some recreational shooting.
Yeah. Definitely. And I want to tell you guys, it's an honor to be on your show. A lot of respect for what you're doing. You're helping the community out on a weekly basis, if not monthly and yearly. So thank you for allowing me to come out and talk about what we're trying to do on a national and local level. So thank you.
Well, I'll be in touch with you because, you know, we might need to get updated on some things, especially when these laws start changing and how it affects us in relation to gun ownership. So you're in my Rolodex. I'll be in touch with you.
All right. Thank you very much, and appreciate your time.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? You realize that nobody's going to save black people but us if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective. If you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost. If you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Now, what's happening in all the urban cities across America is that you've got a process in place right now in urban redevelopment. They're using five techniques to totally wipe you out. One is called gentrification. They're going into all these major cities that used to be majority black population populated cities, and they are erasing you in places like Detroit, Michigan, New York, Boston, Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. used to be the chocolate city. When I went there with President Carter in 1976, at that time, Washington, D.C. was 78% black. Now it's down about 42% black. Chocolate City is gone. Detroit, Michigan is going to be totally wiped out by immigrants pouring into the society. Since 1970 up to now, we've had 45 million immigrants come into the United States. They came in over you, and they're displacing you. And then the second term they use besides gentrification to wipe you out is a thing they call privatization. You go into Detroit, Michigan, as they gentrify, they're going to take all the public resources and things that should be owned by the public, they're going to place them through privatization to the hands of the wealthy whites. Whites are going to buy your golf courses, your subway systems, your bridges, your tunnels. They're going to control your airports, your parks, your museums. Why? Again, because Anderson says, he who owns and controls the resources got the power. If you own and control nothing, you are totally, absolutely useless and expendable. And that's why nothing has changed for us, because we don't understand the system of gentrification and privatization. The other thing they're using to wipe you out in those cities is called metropolitan forms of government, where now they're going to do regional form of government, which means that the whites in the suburbs can come into those black cities and set up some kind of consortium to control what goes on inside those cities so they can extract the resources out of them. Another concept they use in those cities is called cool cities, which says cool cities mean bring in the gays and let them replace black folk. And that's the fourth scheme they use on you. And in Detroit, Michigan, using that as an example again, the governor there has already set up in movement a system where he wants to go to the president of the United States, Obama, and ask him for a green card system where he can start importing Chinese from China to make Detroit, Michigan the biggest Chinatown in the United States, even though that city had a 90% black population. They're going to bury blacks in Detroit, Michigan, underneath Asians coming into Detroit. And already in Detroit, Michigan, in Dearborn, right on the outskirts of Detroit, Arabs own 90% of all the businesses in the city of Detroit are owned by Arabs. Arabs and 90% black population must go to the Arabs to get what they want in terms of food, medicine, clothing, because they own all the, they own out of gas stations. You got 146 gas stations in Detroit, Michigan. Arabs now own 144 in a black city. Blacks own two gas stations out of 146. You own nothing. The rest, the hotels, are owned, and the 7-Elevens are owned by Indians. Asians are owning the laundries. They're owning the hair and wig shops, the nail shops. Blacks own nothing in a 90% black city. And that's why now Detroit went into poverty.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. I want to thank our guests that spent some time with us this evening educating our audience about the proper use and necessity for owning firearms. The founder and president of the National African American Gun Association, Mr. Philip Smith, was with us this evening. Interesting conversation with Brother Philip Smith there, Richard.
Yes, it was. And, you know, it helps continue to shape the different aspects of a community and how we should, in a mindset, think about things. You know, it's not just the economics. It's not just the dealing with the social relationship. It's also being prepared, the defensive part, and what kind of tools. And one thing that, you know, comes out of this discussion tonight is that we have a personal responsibility not only to ourselves to protect our families, and our community, but we have a personal responsibility to utilize the tools we're going to use in an effective way to protect ourselves, our families, and community. And the National African American Gun Association is a tool that will help us in doing just that, protecting and taking a defensive posture that we know will do that protecting.
You know, and also goes to, you know, what we kind of talk about on the program of us doing something. I mean, we can all do something. If we do nothing but just criticize and point fingers, then we're part of the problem and not part of the solution. Mr. Smith mentioned that when he became a gun enthusiast and wanted to join organizations, he didn't see one that was catering to black folks' needs. So he started one, and he said he was surprised about how it kind of blew up for him. So, I mean, that shows us, man, that if we get out here and do something, that is other people. I mean, you heard him say people having these conversations all over the country. And if they weren't, he wouldn't see membership spiking like it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a good thing that what he's doing, and it's only going to grow.
Yes.
I'm looking at the website there, and the sister on the front there pointing at what's that, AR-15? You got another picture with, it might be about 20 sisters here with guns, rifles in their hands. These women, they ain't playing. These sisters ain't playing.
Well, I mean, it's a powerful point that came out about the, you know, the incarceration, the effect it has on black males in relationship to being able to have gun ownership. I think that was a very powerful and important point when we're talking about how we're, you know, because it makes it, it puts us as men in a disadvantaged position. Once again, we're the one that has to have the tools of being a citizen is the woman. Not saying that there has to be a male, you know, or a man prerogative operating, but just that we can be co-equal under the law because possibly, as he laid out, something that we might have done in our youth. And it affects us being able to have certain tools in our age of wisdom, whatever that age is,
after that incident. So I think that was very important and powerful point that came out for us to be aware of and maybe become an advocate to, as he mentioned, how we're going to address that as other things we will have to address down that line.
Yeah, because most of these young men and even older ones that have these criminal records, these felonies are for nonviolent offenses, and most of them are for nonviolent drug offenses.
Yes, yes.
Then when you get it, you're not, in a lot of states, you're not eligible to vote anymore, and you can't own a firearm. Right. So if somebody did break into your house and you had to use deadly force, then you'll be arrested.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm just glad that he's out here and provided a mechanism where our people can congregate, where they can talk about common issues, where they can start chapters in their states, and where they can start learning how to use firearms safely and properly.
As Kwame said, organize.
That's what it's about. I did want to mention also, before we leave the air tonight, Sister POC with the program Revive that comes on Wednesday evening, 8 to 10, and also Sunday morning, 11 to 1. She's having a poetry slam on Sunday and inviting all the black millennials that want to call the program to call up and be partakers in the poetry slam that she's having. She reached out to several people here in Philadelphia. I think Supreme Dow, the Black Writers Museum, and a few other folks. So, it might be pretty good for her on Sunday, Richard. You are to you're not a black millennial, but maybe you ought to read some of your prose.
You want me to cut up? No, Elliot, I don't think that's going to work.
No.
I don't think
okay. Yeah, but I'll be listening. It should be interesting.
I couldn't even sneak in there with something that sound like a poet.
Mama Koso at the Locks Conference put her in touch with several folks. A brother here that does poetry. In fact, he has a lot of young poets with him, Jess Gregg. A few people that she's been in contact with. So right. It should be interesting. The brother that has the clothing line, Just African.
Right.
Ron Green. I think he's going to be involved. So it should be really interesting, Sunday morning's program with the Sunday morning's Revive program with the POC. Yeah, I'll make sure I'll be listening. We'll be looking forward to Sunday evening at 7. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back, Lord willing, on Sunday to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace. If you're driving through the